I was fortunate to play at a very good basketball school. And then you go away and you coach and you think that, you know, if I ever had the chance to coach here at Maryland, it'd be great. But I never thought I'd have the opportunity to come back and coach at Maryland.
Trimble with 3 seconds. Trimble for the win!
A sellout crowd of 43,000 cheers Queen Elizabeth and her consort Prince Philip. Very special guests of the University of Maryland.
90 seconds to go. Vasquez for three in the lead. 78-77 Maryland.
I believe that the terrapin is the loveliest, perhaps the most beautiful of all trees.
There's Wells to jump out, make the depth, and slam it. Yikes. Brown will take it inside the five. Touchdown, Maryland. Terrapins beat Virginia Tech.
And no handshake for the coin toss from Maryland. Before the game today, it is on.
Okay, grab shell, dude.
Uh-huh. Rogers.
And breaking free for the touchdown is Jay Sean Jones on his first touch as a Terp.
You're listening to Inside Maryland Sports Radio.
Maryland basketball in February. Not great. So we're just going to go ahead and talk about that later. Instead, we're going to go ahead and talk about Maryland football first and what appears to finally be a full assistant coaching staff and a much fuller recruiting class as we get just inches from signing day this Wednesday. But before we get started doing that, I will remind you, you are listening to IMS Radio with the publisher of Inside Maryland Sports, Jeff Ehrman, football and recruiting reporter Jared Goldstein, and producer Swink holding it down on the big board. As always, I am your host, Paul Douglas. All right, so football first this time, guys. We'll get to the bad news last because it's Monday, and you know, let's just take it easy on everybody's ears. So, Jeff, we finally feel like we have a full Mike Locksley assistant coaching staff. What did we learn the last couple days, and what are your thoughts on that?
Trying to remember if did we have Del Calcet by the last episode? I don't think he'd been hired yet.
I don't think so. That's why I wanted to start with Del and then get to Brian Williams.
Yes, yeah, so he hired Delbert Calcet, the former Maryland defensive lineman who had a few years in the NFL, played for the Redskins for a while, classic overachiever kind of guy who wasn't a big time recruit or anything like that, but you know, forged a pretty solid career, all ACC guy at Maryland, went on, played the NFL for a while, past 5 years, had been at Albany under Greg Gattuso, who was Maryland's former defensive line coach. So he comes in and takes a defensive line job. I think we might have discussed him, but it's just one of those, you don't really know what you're getting. You know, he's kind of an unknown commodity. Seems like he could be a solid hire. He's from Ohio, so you know if he has any ties there, which coincidentally they might be getting a defensive lineman from Ohio tonight as of last night since this will run Tuesday morning.
It'll be old news by the time they listen.
Yeah, I'll never get used to that. But I think it could be a good hire. He's a guy who, you know, he went to Maryland, so you know, somebody, people always complain about not enough alums being hired. And then Brian Williams, linebackers coach, you know, I had thought that there was a chance that John Papuchis would be the linebackers coach. Apparently,
Did you just do that again? I don't know which it is.
We need to get official word on that.
Can you ask Mike? Like, just say, hey, how do you?
Yeah.
Can you phonetically lay this out for me?
I'll have to ask. So Brian Williams is going to be a linebackers coach. He comes from UAB. You know, not a ton known about him. He's more experienced, obviously, at this similar level to this anyways than Calcet being at Albany. Younger guy, you know, he had six of the signees that UAB had in their class this year he was responsible for. So, you know, I'd be lying if I said I could tell you a lot of, like, Brian Williams from UAB's coaching philosophy or anything, but that's kind of par for the course, I think, with this defensive staff. We just, for the most part, we don't know a ton about these guys. It's kind of just wait and see what they show us in the fall, both, you know, as coaches and recruiters.
It definitely seems like in this case, at least on the defensive side of the ball, you've got a lot of the young and hungry types who look like they're all pretty good recruiters as well. You know, that can go one way or the other in terms of what you put out on the field. But that certainly seems to either be the philosophy behind it or kind of what Lox was stuck with the limited time and energy to put into finding a staff after coaching all the way through the playoff.
Yeah, and the thing you like about this guy, about Brian Williams, is, you know, he's worked at Georgia and Florida State previously. Those weren't on-field coaching. They were analysts and whatever other personnel kind of jobs. But so he should have connections, obviously, that, you know, that's got to be one of the primary reasons why Loxley hired him, I would think, is because of the Southern connections as much as he focuses on recruiting. So, so yeah, that's it for the staff. You know, those are the final guys, and, you know, that we're done trying to figure out who the next hire is, and now it's all about recruiting.
Speaking of recruiting, Jared Goldstein, Maryland had its second and last big official visit weekend over the weekend and got a number of commits and potential commits out of it. Do you want to go player by player and talk about how that worked out for Maryland, whether they've committed, whether they might commit, and where all these guys are going to land come Wednesday?
Sure. Yeah. So there were the four guys who officially visited over the weekend. There's the four-star quarterback from New Orleans, Lance Lejeune, seems to be down to Maryland, Florida State. That may depend on whether Florida State gets a different four-star quarterback who officially visited there this past weekend. Of course, there's the whole situation now with DeAndre Francois being dismissed from the team. So maybe they want to try and take two. I was recruit. I don't think I'd sign up for that, even if the team was saying they'd be willing to take two in the same class. But that's not my decision.
Not if you're that level of player, you would think, right?
Yeah, you'd think you'd beat the other guy out and go on, and that's a perfectly fine way to think. Just not how I'd do it. But I'm also not good at sports. So,
Jared Goldstein, zero star recruit.
Well, you know, in terms of real life sports, you know, but so that's fine. And then
don't mess with him on Madden, though, right?
No Madden, no intramural flag football. Maybe some IM sports to stay away. But in terms of real life, actual sports, I'm more than happy to be what the athletes call a non-athletic regular person. And so then there was, Florida State also got a class of 2020 commit quarterback. So there are just spots filling up and opening up. It remains to be seen necessarily if that will affect his recruitment. The big one, obviously, is the other 2019 kid, John Reitz Plumlee. Ole Miss still seems confident they'll get him. Florida State sources, you know, on their board are talking about, you know, this, that, and the other thing. So, you know, it really just depends whether Loxley can necessarily, you know, pull him regardless of whether Florida State's spot fills or, you know, maybe it stays open. And that's really just going to be, you know, how that one plays out.
So we can assume at this point that basically if they don't get Lejeune, and we're assuming that's how you pronounce that, but we don't know for sure. They're basically giving up on a four-year quarterback and going the grad transfer route.
That unless, you know, there's another name, I feel like if there was another name, they would have at least been offered at this point. They might not necessarily be, you know, recruiting that person super hard, and they could just call them up, you know, if and when they didn't get Lejeune and say, hey, you know, we have this spot open, come play for us. But it doesn't even seem like there's another person right now. So yes, the answer to that, the short answer, I believe, is yeah. And then just in terms of the other guys over the weekend, Maryland got a three-star commit from Tyler DeVera, a tight end from Bergen Catholic High School in Northern New Jersey. That's one of the big parochial schools up in that area. People from the Maryland, D.C. area may equate it to kind of WCAC type league. It's not exactly the same. It's a little different level, but that type of school He's a good route runner. He's at least he's not the fastest, but he's deliberate with his movement. He's crisp in his cuts, and he's got good hands. And what stuck out to me most is that he's a willing blocker. And that's obviously, you know, Maryland's going to rely on running the ball, I would imagine, for the foreseeable future with Anthony McFarland in the backfield, and that stable of running backs. So, you know, a blocking tight end is a positive. And they also pulled that. I didn't intend to make this a pun, but it just kind of came out the way they pulled Marcus Finger from Florida State, or no, excuse me, from Florida, committed to UCF. He committed, I guess, if you're listening to this, yesterday, on Monday. And he's just kind of a mauler type of guy. He was a guy we talked about on the last podcast as, you know, a kid who may end up committing. He's from Wisconsin, so that fits the Paul Douglas get kids to play offensive line from near cornfields.
Yeah, he's a four corn stalk recruit, yes, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly. I get all the big corn fed kids from the Midwest for sure.
That's right.
So he's one of those guys who moved to Florida to get a little more recruiting attention, and that seems to have paid off for him. And then they got a kid who I had dropped a note on, you know, about a week or so ago, punter, mainly punter, but he can also place kick. Anthony Pecorella from, he's from Mineola. He goes to Chaminade High School, on Long Island. And he's just, I mean, with Wade Lee's and his, whatever's going on with his eligibility, whether he gets the extra year or not the extra year, he gets the year or not, Maryland's going to need a punter sooner rather than later. And so if it's this year, you know, they have this kid who can come in now and punt, if he has to wait a year, because Wade gets that year back, then so be it. But at least, you know, there'll be another body who can kick the ball. excuse me, because there's just another walk-on. Bentley Faulkner is the only other guy who really punts. The rest of the guys are place kickers. So those are the big guys to come out of the weekend. And then there was...
Well, and Pecorella, is he a scholarship or is he a preferred walk-on at this point?
He's a preferred walk-on for now.
Okay.
And so that will maybe change down the line, who knows. But coming in, he's a preferred walk-on. And then there was a junior college offensive lineman, Paris Heath, who is a 3-for-3. He's got 3 years to play 3 years, so no red shirt. He can effectively take one, but it'll count against his eligibility. He's from ASA College up in New York also. And that is another guy to keep an eye on. I don't know exactly when he plans to announce. But that's a guy he committed to Louisiana Tech last week. But I would get familiar without saying anything. People should know who he is. And so that's a good one. And I do want to just add that Tank Booker did just text me. He's announcing his decision. I guess this is Monday. So he's announcing his decision Tuesday at 6:30. So everybody pay attention to that, because it might be Maryland and it might be not Maryland, but Maryland's involved. So, everybody listen up.
Okay. So from my count here, Maryland's up to, depending on who's committed, who might commit, et cetera, who's on scholarship, who's not. Right now, they're right around 15 or so in this class. Do we expect any surprises, or do we think that this probably ends up in the 16, 17, 18 range, call it a year, and then basically go huge next season?
Yeah, so they officially have 15 right now, including Pecorella. So we'll count him, because he's, even though he's a preferred walk-on, he's actually going to play and contribute. So then you're looking at potential commitments, or, you know, in a boom situation where they get literally everybody, they're still recruiting. You'd have Lujan, You'd have Cortez Andrews from a couple weekends ago. You'd have Tank Booker. And then you're looking at Paris Heath also. So that's four more. So you'd be up to 19. You might more than likely losing Tank Land out of that situation. So you're back down to 18. And then that seems to be the highest number they'd go. There's also Eugene Asante, who's a four-star linebacker from Northern Virginia, who put Maryland in his top five after a midweek unofficial last week. Virginia Tech still seems to be in the driver's seat there, but that could be kind of a real late surprise. He was super excited in the one text message we got to exchange back in December to get the Maryland offer. So we'll see how that plays out. That could be your surprise. And then there's, I mean, of course, like the ultimate rabbit out of the hat would be either Keelan Robinson or Nick Cross. But that seems beyond unlikely at this point. So that would be the, the world is ending surprise. But yeah, that's, I mean, I don't see it getting above, you know, realistically, 17 or 18 kids. So, I think the plan is you end up next year with a class like 2017, where they signed what, 27 or 28 kids. Not everybody ended up making it, but they signed a ton of kids that year. And that was the 17th or 18th ranked class in the country. So, and especially with it being such a loaded class talent wise, that's, I mean, not a bad plan.
Awesome. Okay. And I guess there's always the chance that Locks just pulls a complete surprise on everybody on Wednesday. So,
yeah, sure.
So you're likely looking under 20 and then really loading up on the class next year.
Definitely.
Okay. Okay. Also, for your listening pleasure, Jared and Schwenk and possibly others will be doing a special signing day podcast on Thursday night, hoping to drop Friday morning. For all you recruitniks out there that really get into this stuff, they're really going to break this class down till it bores you to tears. So if that's your thing, and I know it is your thing because so many of you subscribe to InsideMarylandSports.com, you're going to want to listen to that and look out for it Friday morning or over the weekend. Okay, I guess we have to talk about basketball now. We were talking last week about going into this crucially hard stretch of the schedule, and the fact that Mark Turgeon has, let's say, not done well in road games against ranked teams. He was 0-17 in that particular category going into the game against ranked number 24 Wisconsin Friday night. And Jeffrey, it is now 0-18. Tell us what you saw.
And I saw a familiar script. Good first half, poor finish to the first half, and then a late scoring drought. We've seen it a million times, especially on the road. I mean, I guess, it's somewhat excusable, so to speak, because Wisconsin's really good. I mean, you look at them, you don't think they're really good. When you look at their talent, Hap's just an All-American. He makes everybody better, and that's the biggest thing. But, they've been good. They've been holding people to like 50 points a game lately. They've reeled off five straight wins now. But it's a game that still you felt like Maryland could have won. There were some questionable fouls, obviously. Fernando got hit with a couple questionable ones, but I don't think those decided the game at all. What decided the game was Maryland, having a bad second half offensively, 21 points. I think they scored in the second half. You're not going to win. I mean, how often are you going to win on the road 21 points in the second half? Basically never. And those key three pointers by Wisconsin late, they made the mistake of consistently doubling, and it wasn't even really aggressive double team. They had guys kind of passively being magnetized toward the post when Hap would get the ball. They didn't really double up on him though. They just kind of stood in no man's land, and Wisconsin hit at least three or four threes like that in the second half, and to those final two by Ford were the daggers. Before that, it was anyone's game. So the road drought against ranked teams continues. It seems like it's becoming more of a national story. It used to be just a message board stat that frustrated fans talked about all the time. Seems like it's kind of gone mainstream now this year, though. And, you know, they'll have a couple more chances. Nebraska won't be a ranked team on the road, obviously, but Michigan will be. That'll be tough.
No, Iowa will now, too, after that.
Iowa will, yeah, after they took down Michigan. So yeah, just Maryland hasn't won a road game over a ranked team since 2011.
Oh, God, that's almost worse than the 0-for-18. You know, the thing about that game, Jeff, is you're watching it and you're watching the first half and you're thinking, you know, like this feels like they're playing well and about as well as you can expect against a team that's playing at the level Wisconsin has been at this moment. You know, they're playing on the road. You get to halftime and you look up and Maryland's up 5 and you think, man, that's just not going to do it.
Yeah, it really did feel like that. Like they should have been up by a dozen by that point. But, you know, it's just the same kind of little nicks and cuts that you have with the turnovers and, you know, not forcing any turnovers. I felt like they could have run and should have run more on Wisconsin. And in general, that's no new complaint by anyone. You know, fans have complained about that for several years. But I feel like this team, you know, and this is a whole different subject, but I feel like this team's more well constructed to run than any team he's had. And they could have run in that, they could have run more in that game. So now, you know, you go forward to this Nebraska game, it almost feels like a must win considering next three are, you know, you have Purdue at home and then you have Michigan on the road. And what's the other road game? I'm drawing a blank.
Iowa.
You just said it. Iowa. So with those games coming, those three coming up after, you kind of have to win this Nebraska game. They haven't been very good, but they're still, it's not going to be an easy one, especially on the road.
You know, it seems to me, Jeff, thinking about X's and O's, Maryland basically built that 7-game January win streak on basically literally running everything through Bruno Fernando. Either it was Bruno getting low, you know, not getting the double team and being able to score, or Bruno getting the double team or getting pressured, not being able to make a move and being able to pass out of it to a good look from three or to somebody cut into the basket. When Bruno gets in foul trouble, which is, it's been better at that this year than he was last year by far, but it happened against Wisconsin, bad fouls or not, there's still fouls and he still needs to sit on the bench for a while. It just doesn't seem like Maryland can do anything else when they can't run that offense through Bruno. Because sticks, whatever you want to say about him, good sticks, bad sticks, he's not that guy you can run the offense through. Basically, nobody else on the team is. So you got to wonder whether Turgeon is able to recognize this and think, okay, well, if Bruno is out, we're going to run. We're going to put Lindo in there at the five. We're going to go small and we're going to run. Or they got to be able to do something different because they can't run the game the way they want to when Bruno's not on the floor.
Yeah, and when he's out, you really need, you know, you really only have two other scorers in Cowan and Sticks for all of Sticks's flaws that we've seen increasingly lately with kind of getting manhandled a little bit under the basket, losing the ball a lot when he gets it down there. He's still your number three scorer, and there's a big drop-off between him and the next guy. And then Cowan, you know, if you have Bruno sidelined and Cowan's not playing well, you're out of luck. He was 4-for-16 against Wisconsin. That killed them. They really needed him to step up the second half. So he's had another, after that little breakout run where he was on fire in the second half of those games, he's had another little, I don't know if you want to call it a slump, but 4-for-16 against Wisconsin, 2-for-3, 8 points against Northwestern because of that kind of flukish foul trouble. He had 4 fouls early in the second half. Illinois hit a solid game, 18, but then at Michigan State, 3-for-12, 7 points. At Ohio State, they won easily. He got 20, but, you know, you really need him against those top, against that top competition. So, you know, if he does, and Sticks just, he's just struggling right now. I think we've talked it to death, but the physicality of this league is just a lot for him to handle. And, you know, then you're relying on this. Ayala shot the ball great, though. I mean, he's still, atop the three-point shooting list in the Big Ten right now, which is incredible. But
it's amazing.
You know, he's still not a consistent scorer night in, night out.
Well, you've got a lot of these guys. We've talked about the depth, right? It's a good thing, but these guys are freshmen. So you're getting it when a guy like Wiggins, who seems to have hit that wall a little bit, you know, you expect him to be one of your scorers off the bench. And when he can't get it done, you know, that just compounds the problem.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people get frustrated, and I understand as much as anybody why they do. I watch every single game and have for however long, you know. You want more at this point. You have, and this is a whole different discussion that we've had before. But with all that said, you don't want to hear excuses. But the reality is, you still are relying heavily on three freshmen, and then more so on two other freshmen coming off the bench. And Bruno's only a sophomore, as good as he is, but you know, it's really hard to win on the road in the Big Ten. Regardless, when you look at all these upsets that are happening. And then you're counting on these freshmen on a nightly basis. That's tough. But again, all of that patience for reasoning right like that has pretty much expired at this point anyway. So it is what it is.
Well, let's look at that, Schwenk. Do you feel like we're complaining too much? I mean, this is the number 24 team in the country. It's got a good record and in probably the best conference in college basketball right now. Are we begging right now, or is this legitimate?
I think it falls somewhere in between. I think we need to have a little bit of better perspective as a fan base on how great that 7-game win streak was. You know, when we're talking about a team that's so young like this, you know, the fact that they were able to string those games together, that is really what's going to keep them afloat if they want to compete for a top 4 seed and, you know, a nice seed in the NCAA tournament. So it's frustrating. It's frustrating in the macro view, because it is, you know, these offensive droughts are so Mark Turgeon and his teams. But in the micro view, in the terms of just this season, I think that we should, you know, we should try and free ourselves to be a little bit happier about the situation the Terps are in at the moment. And it's not really that dire either. I'm just kind of looking at the schedule here. So they've got 8 games left. I think if they went 4-4 in those, I don't know if that gets them a top 4, it gets them the double bye in the Big Ten tournament, but I, you know, that gets them to 21 wins. You know, I think that might get them a 5 seed in the NCAA tournament. You know, if they win a game or two in the Big Ten tournament. So I don't think it's
slow down, homie. I don't know about that.
You know, a game. I don't think a game is unreasonable in the Big Ten tournament. Let's say that.
So I think Maryland's won like a combined two or three games in the Big Ten tournament since we've been doing this podcast.
I'm very well aware, Paul.
They're due. Yeah, here's the thing. Right. Look at the scoring, man. I mean, so in that win streak they had, they were scoring like 74 or 70, upper 70s per game. Michigan State, 55. Illinois, 67 against Illinois. That's bad because their defense is horrendous. Northwestern, 70, whatever. It's Northwestern at home. That's like your bounce back game. And then 61 against Wisconsin. So aside from just the droughts, the offense has been down all the way across the board, even with Bruno putting up a double-double every game. So that's the thing right there.
Well, and here's kind of the kicker, right? You look at these next 4 games. Casey Jacobson was on our friend Glenn Clark's program today, and he talked about Maryland as if they were not a team that he was sure was going to make the NCAA tournament yet. Now, I thought that was kind of a ridiculous thing, but then I started looking at the schedule, and you think, okay, well, think about how important this Nebraska game is. You lose that one, you're looking at Purdue coming in, and then you've got to go away to Michigan and Iowa back-to-back. And it's not like it gets that much easier in the back end, because you still got to go to Penn State, where Maryland's always struggled. You got Michigan coming at home, and then Ohio State and Minnesota are not great, but they're not gimmies either. So I feel like this Nebraska game could like be the season. I mean, you don't want to get too, you know, hyperbolic about this, but like, you can see this team kind of going one way or the other, Jeff, based on how this game turns out. And this is a wounded Minnesota, and they're missing a guy, you know, missing one of their better players. You just kind of feel like, or Nebraska, you just feel like you got to get that one.
And they've given Maryland some good games. I mean, I don't know. I'm not one of the guys who studies KenPom and the net ratings and all this stuff on a daily basis. Pat, we should have Patrick Stevens on and ask him the same question, how many games they need to win out of these last eight to make. I have to imagine.
He would know off the top of his head.
Yeah, he definitely would. I have to imagine if you win three, obviously it depends who they are, but if you win three, you're in with the – I think they would really have to melt down, maybe go like 1-7 or
two and six. Yeah.
Worse to not make it, but – It's really tough. I mean, they should win. They should be Minnesota at home, at Penn State. You know, you got to win that. Obviously, they still haven't won a Big Ten game, but the rest are tough.
Yeah,
I mean, the Big Ten tournament. I mean, it's really time to get to do something there. Win at least a couple games. I mean, you know, they haven't won. I guess they beat Nebraska a couple years ago. Last year was first round loss to a pretty mediocre Wisconsin team, the obvious Northwestern one that no one ever wants to talk about again in DC. I'm trying to remember who their other, what they did. I'm missing one year. Well, I don't know who that was the other year.
But I think they went 1-1. They beat somebody terrible one year and then lost to Michigan State, I think, in the
2 years in a row. Yeah.
Semis. But yeah, the one of the biggest knocks on Turton has been his performance in these one-off games, these knockout games. It's just not been good. But yeah, I think I'm with you. I feel like it's probably would have to be like a 2-6 type meltdown that would keep them out, because the Big Ten's getting a ton of respect this year. Though I'm just not sure whether the Big Ten's actually really good or whether they're just beating each other up and pumping up their tier one ratings and all this stuff, but I don't know.
I think again, it's really good. We'll see. Yeah. And I'm a believer in looking at the NCAA tournament and giving some credence to that. But a lot of people are like, oh, you can't decide based on one. I get that, but I think you can get somewhat of a feel for how good of a conference is. So we'll see then, but I think it is that good. I think the past 2 years have basically been like red shirt years for the conference, with all these teams reloading, all these young guys coming in and coming up everywhere. And the improvement in coaching has been huge, even though these guys aren't setting the world on fire. Archie Miller, you know, he showed we can do, beating Michigan State. Chris Holtman was a huge upgrade at Ohio State. Underwood hasn't really gotten going, but he was still an upgrade from John Gross. So, you know, between those factors, I really do think that it is that good. I think it's the best conference.
Yeah, you watch a lot more of Rando college basketball than I do, because I can't stand watching after like Maryland loses a game. I can't watch any other games because I feel like an asshole, but it's, you know, that's a personal problem. Okay, so looking forward this week, Wednesday is the big day. You've got Nebraska at night. You've got signing day in football. Thursday night, the guys are going to record the special recruiting podcast for all of you recruiting nerds. That'll be out on Friday. Check for it Friday and on the weekend. And then we will be back. Let's see. The Purdue game is on next Tuesday. So we'll probably record maybe next Wednesday would make sense. We'll record after the Purdue game. That way we'll be able to talk about Nebraska and Purdue together in the same pod. And in the meantime, if you are not following all of us on Twitter and Facebook and on the Inside Maryland Sports message boards, then you are losing out, because it is go time in Terpland. This next month and a half is going to be crazy with all the news on the football and basketball fronts. So please keep an eye out for us. We're on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are all over the Inside Maryland Sports message boards, and we are out.